What shall we talk about today? Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 5, Episode 18 of the Real Spies, Real Lives podcast. This is where we usually talk about writing, spies, and writing about spies. I'm your host, espionage author P.A. Duncan. For me, sometimes it's hard to figure out what to talk about every week for this podcast. This episode is the 184th episode of the podcast since I started it. And I had zero, zilch, inspiration for what to talk about this week. Mainly that's because my editor returned her edits for the final book in the ebook box set Secrets, which is available for pre-order, by the way, but more about that in commercial time. I spent all day Monday reconciling those edits. Most were just straight out corrections for typos and such, and a little punctuation, though she and I disagree about some comma usage. She forgets sometimes that when I'm writing about my Fisher, who's British, I use British English. English is English, right? No. Aside from some significant differences in spelling, like L-A-B-O-U-R versus L-A-B-O-R, the main issue is what we Americans call a compound noun, like family or government. We treat it like a singular noun and use a singular verb tense with it. For example, my family is going on vacation. In British English, that compound noun family is considered plural. More than one person is in a family. So in British English, it would be my family are going on holiday. It's not terribly difficult for me to write that way. I grew up hearing British English being spoken by Scots and Northern Irish relatives, and sometimes I forget, and I use those British spellings, and I use British colloquialisms, and I use British English. And sometimes my editor forgets that. It's a small thing. She did spot about a half dozen places that needed some elaboration. Nothing a paragraph or two or even a sentence or two couldn't fix. But that did eat up some time. Where I did some rewriting or made additions, I had to go back and proofread to make certain I made no typos in doing that because I'm a notoriously bad typist. So again, nothing significant. But reconciling her edits took all day Monday, which meant I did nothing else. In my weekly planning, Mondays are for scripting and recording this podcast, but that didn't happen until yesterday, Wednesday, because Tuesday was also consumed by that third book from Secrets 2. You see, I decided to issue separate print versions of each of the three books that are combined in the ebook. They're coming out this summer. So first I had to copy the corrected version of book 3 into a print edition file. And because I hate orphans, the formatting kind meaning one word on the last line of a paragraph, I had to make some additional edits to the print version. Because I made those edits to the print version, I had to make sure the ebook version reflected the same edits. Thank goodness for copy and paste. Again, that took up most of the day on Tuesday. Trust me, staring at a computer screen for 7 or 8 hours a day for 2 days in a row, not fun. Too much like my old work. And if I were like some writers who decide to self-publish and not pay attention to those details, it would be easier. But I'd be too embarrassed to put that effort out in the public. Since January, I've been working nonstop on this ebook box set, Secrets, which is 3 full-length novels. I've said that before, I'm going to say it again. It's 3 full-length novels. Each one is over 70,000 words. I wrote and edited all 3 over the past 4 to 5 years, as well as doing a rewrite from scratch of all 3. But from January until now, it was an ongoing cycle of beta readers, reconciling their comments, doing a final edit before sending the manuscripts to my editor, finalizing the covers for the print editions, writing the back cover copy for all 3, figuring out a tagline for the box set, then for each separate book, getting all 3 to my editor. That had to be spread out because I couldn't afford to pay my editor for all 3 at once, and then receiving and reconciling her edits for each book. But yesterday, Wednesday, I uploaded the final EPUB for the box set, so it's all set for the June 1st release. I also uploaded the final cover for the paperback print edition of the first book of the box set, which will be released on June 15th. It's been a jam-packed 5 months, and I've taken very little time for myself. The kind of person I am, I've always been, when I do take an hour or so to do something else, like go to choir practice or go out with friends, I sit there feeling guilty because I'm not at home working on my manuscripts. I was that way at my old day job. I had someone then, my ex before he was my ex, to remind me that there was more to life than work. Now that he's the ex, no one really reminds me of that. I have more books to write, more stories in my head that want to get out. And since I recently had my second birthday in my 8th decade of life, do the math, I understand I'm running out of time to tell those stories. But I also understand that I need to take care of myself to get those stories told. Which is why I'm going on a writing retreat in 21 days. Not that I'm counting or anything. However, it is a writing retreat. What do I have to retreat from, you ask? My house, my town, my friends, my family, the same 4 walls I sit among every day to write. A general definition of a retreat applicable to what I'm talking about is, quote, the act of withdrawing as into safety or privacy, a place of refuge, seclusion, or privacy. I know a lot of writers who need seclusion and privacy to write. They shut themselves away from the world to create worlds of their own. Indeed, really, when you think about it, that's how I write most of the time. I'm in my office. The world is shut off with the door closed, and I write. However, writers who have family or day job obligations often need to get away from those obligations to be productive. When I was working my day job, I would make my own writing retreats. I'd head off to a bed and breakfast for a long weekend, or I'd book a hotel room away from my town where I lived at the time, and I would write or edit and write. Most of the writing retreats I've gone on, however, have been with other writers at places where we can have seclusion and privacy, interspersed with group gatherings to make meals together or to read to each other what we've written. It's my favorite kind of retreat. I'm a retired federal employee, now a writer. No family obligations except for school pickups 2 days a week. Why would I need to get away? After all, I've spoken many times of the view from my writing cave. It's not exactly a cave. It's too bright and it's close to a window. Of the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Shenandoah Valley. Why would I want to leave that, go someplace I'm not familiar with, and try to replicate what I do every day? For the same reason that pre-pandemic, I'd spend hours writing in one of the coffee shops in my town to get out of my house and away from the same rooms I see every day that quite often needed cleaning. But mostly it's to be in the company of other writers. I would quite often run into one or two local writers that I knew in my coffee shop visits. So, if you're going on retreat to write, why do you need other writers? Well, sometimes you have something to commiserate about. There's something wrong with a manuscript. You can't find the plot hole or what is bothering you about the manuscript. And so you need to bitch and moan about that or complain about that. But most of the time, it's sharing what works and what doesn't and sharing common experiences. Sometimes, as a writer, because we write alone most of the time, you feel as if you're in this vocation alone. Again, you write alone. When you decide to submit your work, you're doing that on your own. Most of the time, you edit alone after you've gotten the edits back from your editor. It's a very alone vocation. But when you can simply talk about those experiences with other writers, you understand you may be physically alone while you write, but you have all of those writer friends standing behind you, encouraging you. Sometimes that's hard to remember. Now, at a writer's retreat, you're not retreating from writing, but you're moving toward others with shared experiences. Again, to commiserate, or, more importantly, to celebrate successes. And you can get a good idea sometimes of how to get around any obstacles to your craft. But don't they steal your ideas? I've been asked that more than once. No, the vast majority of writers understand the ethics of writing. That what they write is theirs, and what you write is yours. I've never really worried about that at all. Besides, they know I write about spies and stuff, and I can find them. Just joking. This was like a natural progression for me, hanging out with writers. When I was a pilot, an active pilot, I hung out with other pilots a lot and did what we call hangar flying, or talking about flying. Writers hanging out with other writers is a similar experience. We talk about writing. what we're writing, why we write, why we write what we write, etc. For some of us, it's a richly rewarding and somewhat, religious experience. At writing retreats, sometimes we're super hyper-productive. And even when we're not productive, that's still meaningful. We know what we need, and we can find it. We can tap the resources around us, other writers. So at the end of this month, again, I'm off with 7 other writers to a log cabin in the mountains of West Virginia. Now, I don't do rustic very well. I'm old, and I like my creature comforts like cell phone coverage and Wi-Fi. But I'll be with other writers. And that's the point. And now it's commercial time. I may have said this before. You may have heard me say this before. Secrets, the ebook box set with 3, count them 3, full-length novels, yada yada, is available for pre-order now with a launch date of June 1st, which coincidentally is when I'll be at a writer's retreat. Now, remember I said 3 full-length novels. I said that earlier, 70,000 plus words each. So you have to figure that the pre-order price for that box set would be 10 or 15 bucks, right? Wrong. Pre-order Secrets this month, and you get 3 full-length novels in one place, drum roll, for 99 cents. Yes, you heard that, right? 99 cents for 3 novels in one box set. Maybe I have worked too hard. I'm practically giving these babies away. My Scots ancestors are clutching their pearls somewhere. And not to be outdone, I also have my debut espionage novel, A War of Deception, on sale this month too, in celebration of its 7th book birthday. You can get the ebook of that novel for only 99 cents as well. So this month, May 2024, for under $2, you can get 4 novels. Well, I know I wouldn't pass that up. I'll put the link to both the pre-order and the sale book in the description of this episode. And commercial over. Again this week, because I've talked too much, I'll keep the reading short. I'll read from Book 2 of Secrets, For My Country is the title. This novel is a, quote, memoir, unquote, by a fictional person. We could have a whole existential debate over whether it's a memoir or fiction, but it's fiction because it's the memoir of my fictional character, Olga Lubova, who was the au pair bodyguard in my stories for Alexei Bukharin's granddaughter, but only after she was a colonel in the KGB. Olga, that is. When this memoir opens. You didn't see me doing finger quotes around memoir, but that's what I did. Olga is at a point in her life where she's struggling to find a reason to keep going. All of her family in Russia are dead, have been a long time. Her wife has been murdered by Russian operatives thinking that it was her. And she's subsequently planned her suicide in great detail. But she forgot one thing. Her former charge, Natalia Bukharin, who is now grown up and a wife and mother. For My Country, Chapter 3, Old Horse. I turned to see the two moderately steep wooden staircases that ran from the main house and the guest house to the dock. Whereas I had easily negotiated the one from the guest house, albeit one step at a time as a concession to my arthritic knees, a tall, red-haired woman seemed to glide down those stairs. The woman's riding boots had heralded her approach, and she wore a knee-length tweed coat with a hood over her hair, though plenty of it escaped. A pair of oversized sunglasses covered the top half of her face, a KN95 mask the bottom. I looked back at the lake with a sigh and pulled my mask over my nose and mouth. Hands in her pockets, Natalia Petrovna Bukharin-Terrell stood next to me, Olga Lubova, her former Opar bodyguard. "Contemplating a long walk off a short pier?" Natalia asked. I had noticed this girl's fierce intelligence upon our first meeting nearly 30 years ago. I gave Natalia what the girl would expect, a shrug. "Well, after watching you from my home office window for the last 15 minutes, Natalia said, "I decided it was time for a break so I could come down here and stop you."
"Why would you think I contemplated such a walk?"
"Let's see. You sold your house in America, arranged the distribution of your belongings, and updated your will and medical directives. You showed me where to find all that paperwork, and you hardly ever leave your apartment. You haven't been to my house, only steps away, for more than 2 weeks. Shall I continue my presentation of evidence?"
"Perhaps I have had bad news from my doctor."
"Well, since I'm your designated next of kin, and there's no HIPAA law here, I checked with your doctor when you didn't say anything. You're as healthy as a horse."
"Staraya loshad, perhaps.
An old horse."
"Whatever.
What's wrong?"
"Nothing is wrong. Merely seeking a simple conclusion for a long, complicated life."
"Oh, we all hope for that. No need to hurry it along," Natalia said. I shrugged again.
"What is there for me now?"
"Well, for one, my kids, who fucking adore you, Mom's and Poppy's son, Ivan Alexeyevich, and speaking of my grandfather, he's the reason you can't die for a long time. He's only 4 years younger than you. Don't give him any ideas about mortality, okay? Not only do I need him, and my kids need him, but Mums and his kid need him too."
"I have nothing more to accomplish."
"Well, relaxing and enjoying life is something to accomplish. You've earned it." Natalia smiled. "I mean, dealing with my shit all those years means you deserve a long, fruitful retirement." When I didn't reply, Natalia turned to face me. "What? You think there's an afterlife where you'll see Olive again?" Natalia asked with sarcasm worthy of the woman, Mums, my Fisher, who'd raised her.
"Of course not. I am good atheistic communist still. It is merely..."
Another pause seemed to trigger Natalia's impatience. Her "what?" was abrasive, insistent.
"I have nothing to do. I am too old to be bodyguard to your children or Ivan. I have read every book in my apartment and in your house. I have streamed every television program of interest to me. I have one friend my age left in this world, your grandfather, Alexei Nikolaevich. What is there for me to do? Nothing."
My apologies if anyone is triggered by mention of suicide. My father committed suicide 42 years ago, and whenever that comes up in my writing, it's always a difficult scene for me to write. But each time, it gets a little bit easier, and over the years, my writing about it has helped me deal with my own feelings. One of the reasons why I write. And enough about that. So for the next 3 weeks, I'll be trying to figure out how to do a book launch from a remote log cabin in Elkins, West Virginia. No rest for the wicked, my granny used to say. Don't worry, though. I always make sure I have time to keep an eye out for spies. The proceeding has been a production of Unexpected Paths Media, copyright 2024, all rights reserved. Join us next week for a new episode of the Real Spies, Real Lives podcast. And as always, Slava Ukraini!